fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with a weekly look at the world of non-league football. It's a time of the season when there are tears of joy here and tears of sorrow there. A relegation, promotion, and the pain of just missing out. It's what football's all about. Unless, of course, you support Rossington Maine. They spent the last 32 seasons in the same division of the Northern Counties East League at Step 6. Limited highs, limited lows. But now the air is a little bit more expectant. Third place means a home semi-final playoff this weekend. And media man Jack Chillo, still a twinkle in his parents' eye the last time the club played in any other division, tells us why this might just be the year. Running up the week's news after a busy Easter, the non-league paper's very own John Couch. So plenty to come. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So this week I wanted to sort of carry on that trait of non-league, of never giving up. Our next club have been playing in their current division, the Northern Counties East League Division 1, since 1991. That's 32 years without the joy of promotion, without the sorrow of relegation. All that could change, though. This Saturday, after a third-place finish in the normal season, they have a home playoff semi-final game, and they're just 2 wins away from moving up from Step 6 to Step 5. To tell us more, let's welcome to the Non-League Football Show their media man, Jack Chulo. Welcome to the show, Jack.
Nice to be on the show, guys.
Well, it's 32 years in one division. That's some feat. I don't suppose you were even alive when they were last not in this division.
No, definitely not. I'm definitely not that age as well. So apart from being just over a couple of years now at Rossington, they've been in the same division sort of, well, like I said, 32 years, and they've never been any higher. So the fact of getting promoted to, which would be Step 5 of the unknown, is quite big. And although the club was in the playoffs last year, we did actually face North Ferriby, who, you know, have been, their previous club have been in the National League, National League Premier. So it was sort of one of them games where we weren't expected to remove the underdogs. And I think the belief going into it was, you know, we're sort of going to get defeated. Now, this year, it's all different. We've done well in the regular season. And I think it's that exciting feeling that, you know, there's going to be, we don't know what's going to happen on Saturday. We're at home. We've got the best sort of chance. We're in form. And it's just an exciting time for the club.
Yeah, and North Ferriby, obviously, they didn't look back either this season, have they? Gone on to take that division by storm as well. So, yeah, you're going into this game now. You're a Rossington main fan as well. And, you know, the club was originally formed, I believe, as Rossington Miners Welfare. And there's a minor merger a few years back, a local Rossington club. But I've never really known where the main bit of the name come from. Can you tell us that?
Well, it's more the fact that the village is a mining village, and there is the team sort of side of the mines welfare, and so on. But you'd actually have to look back into the history, because we get asked this a lot of time, and a lot of people don't know where the main comes from. It's more of just a namesake sort of thing. But if you actually look at the size of the village is, I think there's a stat, statistic on it that you might have to just do a little bit of research on, but it's one of the biggest villages in Europe. Wow. So, you know, it's bigger than North Ferriby or places like that. So it's quite exciting because, for example, this is our joint biggest game, if not our biggest game, because it's at home. So it's quite exciting to see what sort of crowd we're getting. And we've got that sort of chance to get a big sort of crowd there because of the size of the village. But you'd have to do your own research on that, because there's a few people asking me, and none of us are any wise on it.
It's another one of those non-league legends. I'm sure there's a guy sat in the corner somewhere, probably someone still involved at the club. Is there anybody at the club that still remembers the time when Rossington Maine weren't in the Northern Counties East League Division 1?
Yeah, absolutely. So our club secretary, Gerald Parsons, I don't want to even guess his age, but he's definitely been at the club for over about 50 years. We always have a little joke with him and say, you know, in the sad time, that if he ever passes, we'll sort of bury him in the pitch, or we'll make a stand after him sort of thing. So He's a statistic guy, and I'm sure he'll be able to back it up on every single name of it.
And I'd say that you've been in the same division for all those years. And I used to have a bit of a jibe at one of my friends that was a Basingstoke Town fan, because they had a similar existence. Every season was mid-table. There wasn't really a lot going on. They win a local cup or something like that. But I wouldn't think that it's been a boring existence as a Rossington fan, certainly not this season as well. I'm looking at the number of goals that you scored in the division this year. Is it 105 goals netted this season by Rossington?
Yep, 105, yeah. It's a big amount.
It is, because you only played 38 league games. I mean, that's... I'd imagine it's not... A Rossington game isn't one that you leave early.
No, it's we've created a bit of a sensation, really, because our manager, Ben Hunter, is a great guy. And not only is he a good manager, he's good with player contacts. He's been in the game a while. He's been an ex-pro. And you sort of get people say, you know, how have you got this player? For example, Ross Hanna. Yeah. Ross Hanna's played ex-professional. He could still play at step. He could still play at step three, step two, what sort of thing, in the non-league. And it's all about your sort of, you know, your connections as a manager, and that's how you bring players in. And it's not, there's not really been a boring existence at all. When I joined the club, I sort of looked back and I thought, I think it's more of just a gradual possession, you know, from sort of football. There's been no heavy invest or anything like that. It's just been gradually getting better. And you look at the sort of league and the club is just, it's just clicked this year. You know, they've, like you said, 100 and something goals. And the amount of times we've had bad games where we've performed bad, but you know there's a goal coming last minute. And I think that sort of belief gets you, you know, that extra sort of results. And when you've got a player like Ross got injured at the start of the season. I suppose everybody's thinking, well, he's probably not had much of an impact, you know, in terms of his stats. And then all of a sudden, everybody saw he had three hat-tricks in a row. And he was on for some sort of world record. And it's that sort of player, having that player in your squad. And having the right balance of, you know, the mixture of youth and so on. And I think that is, like you said, in any league, 105 goals in 38 games is a significant amount.
Yeah, and Ross Hanna, as you say, is a striker well known to many in the non-league circles as well for his time in the Football League with Bradford, but he's also was with Halifax Town, wasn't he? Grimsby, yeah. Chester, Barrow, yeah, more recently at Matlock Town as well, where he got them promotion as well. So he's one of those sort of Pied Pipers that seems success seems to follow him as well.
Yeah, and I think when you look at you've seen it now in a lot of leagues, players sometimes just drop down and they think it's easy, you know, and you know, obviously they go two steps below and they take it for granted and sort of thing. And you see that at the start of the season where maybe they have that little realization period where they think, oh, hang about, it's a different type of football, or you know, it's a different sort of game, or I've got to do more work to get in positions rather than getting set up and so on. And I think as the season's gone on, players like Ross and that with us have definitely got better. I think so. Campion, for example, who've won the league, you know, you can't really argue with them. I think they've had over 32 victories, something like that. 32 victories, 4 losses, 4 draws. They deserve the championship, whatever. They've had 2 top scorers who've been sort of leading the way, Marcus Day and I think Patrick Sykes. And out of nowhere, Ross had 3 hat-tricks back-to-back and he continued scoring. It was just sort of one of those things where he'd found that little bit of his game where he was just working, you know, he was working like clockwork in this division. And I think that's the sort of, you know, when you've got players like that that class, it's just the performance on the day and that's all that matters, really.
Yeah, and it's good, as you say, with the gaffer being able to bring in those sort of people. Obviously, finishing third, you get home draw in the semi and you face fourth-placed finishers at Wakefield AFC. Interestingly, though, second place, Harrogate Railway Athletic, host Horbury Town, who actually finished 6th in the table. That's because Staveley Miners Welfare were the club who took voluntary demotion last term from the Premier Division, that many listeners will probably remember. And under the rules, they're not eligible for promotion for at least one season, having done that. So they finished 5th, but have to sit it out and watch from the sidelines. So, Were you all aware of that at the start of the season when you saw the embryonic table starts to form? Was everybody sort of fully aware that Staveley wouldn't be in those playoffs come the end of the season? That gives you a bit more of a chance to qualify for the playoff positions?
No, I'll be honest. At the start of the season, obviously we got the playoff last year. We thought, well, we've got to try and get the playoff again. That was the aim. I'm no management, I'm no coach, I'm a player. But that's the clear aim, really. Sort of, you want to progress, don't you? You want to do better. And then when we were looking at the last season's table and so forth, Staveley obviously come down because they got voluntary relegation. I wasn't aware until the fact that I'd probably say a month or two ago that they weren't allowed to go up. So all season long, we've been to their place, and we had probably one of our best forms of the season. We won on their artificial surface, and it was only recently that we found out that they couldn't get promotion. So it was kind of, I kind of feel like the teams in and around the playoffs who were sort of outside of the playoffs pushing for the playoff places, I think maybe they've only found out last minute, which is a big difference because, you know, if you're thinking, oh, well, we're not going to make it because so-and-so are there, it's a massive sort of thing. And I think, it sort of gives them teams who are mid-table a massive boost. And you've seen that with the likes of, I think Horby was sort of settled that they're not going to finish top five. And then all of a sudden, they've come in. And then same with Briggs, same with Armsthorpe. You know, there's teams like that have been. But ultimately, as a club, Staveley, it's a great club. And they've got a great facilities. Their argument to take voluntary relegation was due to the fact, I think, that, you know, they just wanted to sort of stabilise with, you know, with wages, et cetera, et cetera. But they've been really good all season. So your argument is, if they had the same team now in the league above, would they have stayed up? And I probably think, yeah, they would have. So it's a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a crazy one. But I wasn't aware until only recently.
It's certainly a brave one, isn't it? Because I've also seen some of the good stuff that they're doing off the field as well, and the development of the site that
really,
they're doing.
Really good.
And it's almost, they've been brave enough to take a step backwards, and it's almost like they're about to jump on a spring ball for next year. But it'll be interesting to I'll be certainly watching them, and I'm sure you will be. But first of all, you've got this playoff, the semi-final this weekend. A win and you play the winners of the other match that I mentioned there, the Harrogate Railway Athletic against Horbury Town. First you need to beat Wakefield. They finished 14 points behind you. You had 84 points come the end of the season. So with the home draw two, that must put you as massive favourites. But of course, it never works like that in these one games, does it?
No, definitely not. You look at Wakefield, for example. Wakefield were formed in, if I've done my research right, 2019. So, you know, it's a four-year-old club. But if you looked at Wakefield before that they were formed, I think it's one of the biggest cities in England, probably if not the biggest city to not have a football team. Yeah. So, a semi-professional football team, whatever you want to call it. Obviously, it's a rugby city. So, it's one of them where you have that thing of they are a big club in your head. You know, they could be the next Salford, they could be the next Yeovil, do you know what I mean, sort of thing. It's one of them where you either look at it as the pressure's on, the pressure's off, whatever. But ultimately, the whole point of the season is, you know, you try and finish higher, and in the playoffs you get rewarded, you get the home advantage, and that's the thing. But there's never, you know, it's one game at a time sort of thing. You never look ahead in non-league football because it's all about the present.
It is all about the present. But you mentioned about some of those other clubs that could be up and coming. The one thing I do know about Rossington is it's very close to the Doncaster Sheffield Airport terminal. So, you know, maybe you could become the next one that the Hollywood entrepreneurs want to invest in.
Yeah, well, definitely, because myself as a Doncaster Rovers fan, Doncaster is the... Doncaster Rovers are the professional team in Doncaster, obviously. There's no other outfit. There's actually, if you go into anywhere, Sheffield, something like that, which we're near, there's a lot of non-league teams. There's a lot of sort of, you know, non-league teams that, like, say, Sheffield FC, you know, step sort of four. In Doncaster, really, you've got the Rovers, obviously a League Two club now. You've got us and Armsthorpe in the Northern Counties, East League Division One, which is step six, step ten of the overall league of Premier. So it's that sort of thing of, can we get back into the division above for the first time. Armthorpe have been in there. That's where they were based sort of a few years ago. So it's kind of that fact of you either go and watch your sort of full-time team in Doncaster, which is Doncaster Rovers, or you come and watch Rotherham Main. And I think that is a big thing with us, with attendances and stuff like that. If, you know, if Doncaster at home, you'd like, it's tougher for us to get, you know, with being so close, it's a 5-10 minute drive away. And I think that's the exciting factor, really. This Saturday, we've got a semi-final game. It's arguably the biggest game in the club's history. Doncaster away at Harrogate. It's a sort of sold-out crowd at Harrogate. Obviously, the environment staying quite small for a League Two club. So, it's sort of anticipating. It's a magnet to bring everybody to Rossington, and I think it's an exciting time for that.
So how many are you, you know, maybe expecting for the semi-final on Saturday?
Well, this year we've had the crowds have been up compared to last year. An average crowd been 200 plus sort of thing, and that's good. With the bigger games, we've had a few random ones on bank holidays where they've been 400. We had Worksop in the semi-final of the Sheffield Hallamshire Seniors Cup last year, which obviously, you know, everybody knows about Worksop. They've done great this year. They're champions. I think that was about 800. So we're looking at, you've got to look at that sort of benchmark, you know. It's got to be over double of what an average thing. And I think the factors of Doncaster, I'd say around 700 to 800 sort of thing. And that'd be just great for the club all around, really.
Great for the club all round. It's great for you as well. It's games like these that, why you do your job, of course. It's going to be a busy day for you, filled with adrenaline, I'm sure. I remember getting a call 10 minutes before kickoff for one playoff semi-final for my club, Hazen Yeading United, being told I was doing a live commentary for the whole game and not just the goal updates. So, you know, maybe you might get a similar sort of call. But for days like this, it's where people like you, you've got your own qualifications, your own experience in this marketing side of things, the social media side of things, the journalism side of things, is where you can really help your club and also the guys within the club as well, being, you know, in a media spotlight and really, you know, help lift your club into that next level.
Yeah, I think that is the sort of aim all around. It's the fact this year with the club, everything's sort of going well. Everything's sort of on the up, not necessarily going well. You've got your, for example, before I joined, just over a year and a half ago, 2 years sort of thing, Russ, who's our photographer, he's worked professional photographer in Football League, Championship, whatever. He was sort of relying on doing a bit of both, sort of media and photography, and he's absolutely brilliant at photography. And he's sort of given, this year, for example, with me doing that, it's given him the chance to do that. And then we've got the clubhouse sort of getting better. Obviously, the players on the pitch, the crowds. It's sort of that everything. And you've got to be at those games where, you know, the midweek games where you've not put the best performance in and you've drawn 1-1 or something like that. Yeah. And then you've come to these games and you're sort of seeing everybody come together. And that's what it's about. And it's non-league football is about that, you know, what if we could go higher, we could be that fairy tale club that goes through the league, and that's what drives everybody to it, isn't it? So definitely that sort of thing.
Yeah, you're one of the young guns, I guess, that we're all pinning our hopes on to carry on all the great work in non-league for years to come. I sense that you're really enjoying it as well, though, the being involved in non-league and the people that you get to meet.
Definitely. I came to the club. Obviously, I've studied at university, done my degree and my master's. I did a placement with Doncaster Rovers in my second year of uni. I also did a sort of internship with the Sheffield Wednesday team when I was doing my master's degree. And that was all sort of pre-COVID. After COVID, it was a little bit difficult. But the chairman got in touch with me, Dan. And he sort of said, you know, you're local to the area, I've seen what you do. Why don't you come down and, you know, we sort of good experience yourself, and it's good for the club as well. And I was like, well, it's one of them opportunities you can't really refuse, really. And as soon as you get down there and you get involved with it, you start, you know, Rossington are my local non-league club, effectively, they're the neighbours club to me. I live about a mile away from them. So you get ingrained with that sort of community and ingrained with the club, and you want them to do well. And especially a club like Rotherham, it's quite fortunate that everything sort of it's sort of ticking and it's going in the right direction. So it's that sort of you start to care, you start to do more than you'd thought you'd ever do. And it's all good for the club, really. And it's nice when you hear people say, oh, I've done this, or if it's just something, a nice compliment or something like that. It's glad that your work is not wasted. It's been put to good use, really.
It sounds great. Headhunted by non-league as well. I love that. And I love your passion coming through. So Saturday evening, the season could be over, or it could about to become the busiest week of your life. Have you thought about what that playoff win might mean for you, what it might mean for the club?
I'm trying not to think about it too much because I've still got a day work tomorrow to get my head around. It's a massive day, really. You don't want to sort of announce any pressure or anything like that, but it's just a big day. It is definitely, in my opinion, people will have, you sort of older members will all say, we've had this cup game once in the past and it was a big day or whatever. But it's the biggest game of the club's history on Saturday. And that says it all, really. So you've just got to sort of, make sure everything's, you've got to stick to the game plan, you've got to stick to sort of every plan in everything, even the guys in the ticket office or whatever. We're probably going to get a massive crowd. You've just got to take it as it comes, and once the whistle goes, that's it, and it's up to the players and it's up to the staff. That's all you can do, really.
That's all you can do. One thing I always say to people, though, try and take at least 10 seconds, 30 seconds, just to take it all in, whatever else you're doing, put your pen down, put your keyboard down, whatever, and just take it all in, because sometimes it doesn't come again for a long while, and it is why we all do it. It is why we love non-league. It is why we love the passion that you're showing, Jack. Thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Best of luck at the weekend, and hopefully we'll speak to you again very soon.
Yeah, no worries. Well, hopefully everybody will cheer us on Saturday.
Time then to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers. So welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Executive Editor at the Non-League Paper, Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, John.
Thanks, Tim. How are you?
Well, good. I that sense of excitement. We've got the Grand National this weekend, and I've sort of got that voice on it. I can almost see the final finish. Almost a final finish in the National League. We said that Easter would play a big part in the title race, and well, after that Good Friday result and great win for FC Halifax Town over Wrexham on that was Good Friday. It certainly added some spice to what we were expecting on Easter Monday. But Wrexham again took the upper hand in that thrilling 3-2 home win over Notts County. Was it the best game you've ever been at, John? I believe you were there.
I was indeed there, Tim. And I tell you what, it's right up there. It really is right up there. I think just for the occasion more than anything. From the moment he arrived, he just sort of sensed that there was something special going on. And I think that was sort of buoyed by the result of Wrexham's on Friday at FC Halifax. All of a sudden, we're in a situation where Notts County were top of the league, and if they avoided defeat, then really it really was going to go sort of all the way. Wrexham had to win. The first half I thought was very, very cagey. I thought Notts County played very, very well. They managed the occasion very well. And they kind of had Wrexham where they wanted them, actually. And things were starting to get a little bit frustrating for Wrexham. They got a beautiful goal on the stroke of half-time through John Postock. And that was probably what they deserved. But what we got in the second half was just unbelievable. I mean, Wrexham come out like a team possessed, back level within 5 minutes. Then went 2-1 up. Then back come Notts County for 2-2. And it was on a knife edge, and then Wrexham scored again, through Elliot Lee. And so just when you think, you catch your breath, Notts County get a penalty in the last second of the game. And that man, Ben Foster, just out of retirement. I mean, what a what a finale, what a story that was, and you know, saving Kevin Scott's penalty to the absolute, sending the place absolute raptures. I don't think I've heard a noise quite like it at a non-league ground. It was absolutely incredible, and you know, everyone was hugging each other, and all people I didn't even know, and it was just a great occasion for both teams. Both teams put up a hell of a show. It was it was just a memorable game of football. Felt privileged to be there, and you know, both managers were. Luke Williams was very magnanimous in defeat, and Bill Parkinson looked like he'd been through the rounds, having already been booked as well. He had a bit of a torrid afternoon as well, but it was just a great game of football. As I say, you're privileged to be there, and you know, it's given the title race a little bit of a weighted look to it now in favour of Wrexham, but who would have thought that Wrexham would get beat by FC Halifax? It's not all over yet.
Yeah, I was thinking over, you know, Easter Sunday, whether fans, players, management, everybody associated with both of those two clubs before they played on Easter Monday, you know, if they would have offered, you know, a handshake where they both took promotion, however it came, wonder if they would have taken it. You know, there is that extra in becoming champions, isn't it? But as you say, the nerves must be shaken to bits for both sets of teams.
Yeah, that's right. I did wonder that, and I must admit, I think that's probably why I was so impressed with Notts County. I think because it was so, you know, obviously playing at a race course, it was a very highly charged atmosphere. The fans were bang up for it, you know, the music was very, very loud, like in the build up to the game, you know, to get people, you know, to get people up for the game. But Notts County just handled it so well, and I think that's probably because they play in front of big crowds themselves, at their home. You know, a 10,000 crowd is pretty much the norm for them as well, so I think they certainly deserve credit by the way that they set about the game, and yeah, certainly they settled down first, and as I say, they were well deserved of their half-time lead. But and Luke Williams spoke at the end, and he played down, you know, all thoughts of you know, the two-horse race, it's over now. He's pretty much said that for the last few weeks. He doesn't want to get. He doesn't want to get caught up in the whole sort of Kevin Keegan, you know, I'd love it if we beat them kind of scenario. He's very careful not to do that. But yeah, you could tell that he would have loved that penalty to go in at the last minute, 3-3. If they'd got to come away with 3-3 there, and you know, kept their lead on top of the division, even though Wrexham had a game in hand, you would have. Thought that they could at least take it into the last week, but no, he was really, really magnanimous in defeat, and some of the fans as well. The fans were very sort of gracious as well, but fans of both teams, you know, Wrexham were very, very respectful to Notts County throughout, and that goes down right down from the co-owners right down to the team, the management, and the fans as well. It was just a very, very respectful occasion all round.
And I think that's been evident throughout the season, isn't it? It's all been done in good humour and good excitement. Everybody's getting caught up in the trappings of this title race. You know, as you say, we've got Wrexham 3 points clear, a game in hand now over County, who can only try and win what their last three games and see what happens. Both sides, though, 100 points and 100 goals, record-breaking times, and we've not even got to the playoffs yet. Whoever finishes second is probably going to finish 20, maybe 30 points ahead of the seventh place finisher, which will also make the playoffs. It's such an amazing achievement. Whoever finishes second, but they do have to go through the playoffs.
Yeah, to say as soon as that last ball's kicked in regulation time, they're all back to square one again, aren't they? And you know, say Notts County could be sort of drawn against the team who are coming. Well, Notts County, all Wrexham, sorry, could be coming up against the team who could just squeeze into the playoffs by the skin of their teeth. But you have to remember that the momentum is with that team. Yeah. Whoever don't go up has to somehow pick themselves off the ground again, and find something from somewhere to go again and just dig deep. I think they'll both be okay. I think purely because they're quality footballers, and they're two quality teams. They've got a lot of experience in both the playing squad and in their management. I think they will still be huge hurdles to overcome for anybody else. But as I say, they will have to find something from somewhere to get over the disappointment of not winning the league and going again. And as we've seen many times before in the playoffs, that it's often a tough thing to do. It's very rare. I think if you look back at the records since the playoffs come into the National League, that the top two went up. It doesn't happen very often, but I think if it doesn't happen this year, it would be absolute travesty. But I think it probably will. But
I think that's probably
knows,
like,
who knows?
You've intimated earlier that about Luke Williams, you know, a number of weeks back, writing off their opportunity of catching up Wrexham. And I think that probably is a bit of the psychology to make sure that his players aren't too disappointed should they finish second at the end of the season, that they still go in with that momentum into the playoffs. And the whole of the table, it's exciting. It's perfectly poised with almost like the top half sitting mathematically dreaming of a playoff spot, while the bottom half have an eye over their shoulder on a potential drop. So I'm looking at it realistically, probably the top nine down to Southend chasing those spots 2-7 for the playoffs.
Yes, I think that's probably right. I mean, 2 weeks ago, Southend looked out of it, didn't they? They managed to find something from somewhere, and all of a sudden they're sort of right back in it. Eastleigh have slipped up the last couple of weeks, and that's given the likes of Southend and Bromley an extra sniff. And suddenly that place for sixth and seventh, I'd say Bourne would have slipped up a little bit recently as well. So there's certainly positions to be had there, and the likes of Southend would be looking at them. But I think for the likes of the two form teams at the moment are our two FA Trophy finalists, and Halifax and Gateshead, who were going absolute great guns. Obviously, sadly, a bit too late for either of them, but they found some form in terms of the FA Trophy. And then it's down the bottom. Again, there's been a lot of change there in the last couple of weeks. We were talking about sort of eight or nine teams that could get sucked into that. All of a sudden, I think you're now looking at probably five or six. Obviously, Scunthorpe have gone now with Maidstone, so that leaves two. And I think you're probably looking at two of Aldershot, Yeovil and Torquay, who are going great guns. You know, they think they've won their last four matches as well. So they found a better form just at the right time as well. So that's going to be fascinating as well. Three big, big clubs down there, Aldershot, Yeovil and Torquay, and it looks like two of them are going to go. So I mean that's huge. There's going to be still plenty of football and plenty of massive points still left to be won, and it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, they got those clubs you mentioned there at four games left each. I'd say you Aldershot there on 45 points. You've got Torquay 43, Yeovil on 39 points. I would have said 50 points is probably the magic mark because we've got a couple of clubs above them on 49. But you mentioned the former Torquay United. There's always one club that is sort of hanging around that then just seems to get it right at the very end, doesn't it? And there might only be four games left, but I can see this one going down to that final week.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it was only a few weeks ago I was talking to a few Aldershot fans. Friends of mine who thought, you know, I think they were 10, 11 points clear at one point, and it looked like they'd done enough already. And they just got sucked in, didn't they? Right at the last sort of like quarter of the season, they just managed to lost their way a little bit. They brought in Tommy Ridrington. Question maybe whether that was too little too late. I don't know. You're asking a lot of Tommy to turn things around very, very quickly. They do have a 3-point cushion at the moment. They've got a massive game on at home against already relegated Scunthorpe on Saturday. That's going to be a huge game. And then you look at the others. You look at Yeovil. Yeovil just seems to have fallen off a cliff, and it doesn't sit right, does it? At Yeovil at the moment. We've listened to some of Mark Cooper's interviews. It just doesn't seem a happy camp, and I just think that's going to be very, very difficult to turn that around and to get things going again. The next game is Wrexham away, which is not the sort of game they want at the moment.
I think for Yeovil as well, if I recall this, just having a look, their last game on that last Saturday, the 5:30 PM kickoff, 29th of April, they've got to go away to Boreham Wood, and as you've already mentioned, they're in the hunt for that final playoff spot. No game's ever easy, but as you say, that the mindset just doesn't seem right from all the messages that are coming out from Yeovil at the moment.
No, it doesn't. It does seem like a very unhappy camp. I've seen a lot of sort of interviews over the last sort of two or three weeks, and you know, Josh Dornan, the captain, coming out and basically saying how it is. And there's a lot of talk about sort of players' desire, and you know, the manager's certainly doing his bit. But then he goes and questions, you know, whether he's had enough backing over the last 6 months or so from behind the scenes. It's just not sitting right with him at the moment, and it's not the time of year to lose your way quite like that. And I just hope for their sake that they can find their feet just at the right time, because that's a big club, a club that were playing with the Championship about 10 years ago, and now they're looking at trying to avoid going down into the sixth tier, which we've already seen it happen to Scunthorpe. But I say that just goes to show just how strong the National League is this year, and the fact that you've got two big clubs like that who are fighting against relegation. Torquay as well. Torquay were in the playoffs two, three years ago. And now you're seeing the advantage of having a manager like Gary Johnson in your helm. Torquay could have bit the bullet with him early in the season a couple of times. There was a couple of times where it was rumoured that maybe they would part company. They stuck with him, and this is why because now Torquay are coming good at just at the right time. Four straight wins, and all of a sudden they're a team with the momentum down the bottom there, and they're certainly going to give it a good go. I think they were like 10 points behind, weren't they? About three or four games ago. It's incredible. But they've given themselves a real chance.
Yeah, it's all going to be very exciting in his remaining games. And talking of remaining games, I mean, fixture backlog was something we spoke to Matt Badcock about last week. And it does appear that the FA has now extended the time period allowing in which to complete the season, for certainly for clubs at steps five and six at least, where those biggest backlogs appear to be. This is effectively what they've decided. The leagues that seem to have been announcing this throughout the day at various step five and step six. Step five clubs involved in the possibility of promotion and relegation must complete their fixtures by Tuesday the 25th of April, and then playoff matches for the two clubs finishing in second place, both of whom are going to play against a step four side, as will be advised once all those fixtures have been finished, and they've got to be played over the weekend of the 29th of April. So that's why all these games have to be finished. Then step five clubs not involved in promotion or relegation will have the ability to play until Monday the 1st of May, which is a bank holiday, to complete those fixtures, just so that we get a complete calendar of games finished. And Step six, clubs have to complete their fixtures by Monday the 1st of May with the internal playoff matches, fifth versus second, fourth versus against third, and then the final and all that to be played on or before Monday the 8th of May. Clubs can change the venue if a home club ground isn't available because of the wet weather we've had. I think that's rule 8.7 of those standardised rules. I know a number of people have been going through with highlighters and flagging up various bits and pieces in recent days. I see one of those games that have changed, Brookhouse in the Combined Counties League. We mentioned them last week with a big backlog of games. Their game at home to Rainers Lane has been switched to a neutral venue of Sun Sports in the coming week. One thing that the FA has said is that there aren't going to be any points awarded for any match that still remains unplayed. So that's to encourage all the clubs to get matches on, because I think there was some suggestion that clubs might, you know, allow walkovers just to, so they didn't have to play their games, and then that then obviously then has its own impact on promotion and relegation. And at the moment, it does look like all scheduled matches, all matches that are left, have some sort of scheduled date, and that might mean that, you know, some clubs are playing every day for the next 10-11 days. But there is sort of scope there, and I guess this change by the FA has given them a little bit more scope to maybe spread those out, subject to league approval. It's difficult staying on top of it from a reporting point of view, but I'd imagine it's even more difficult if you're the secretary, the players, the managers, trying to work out where you've got to be over the next 2 weeks playing your football.
That's right, yeah. I mean, it's all got a little bit hectic, isn't it? Just when we thought that the season was petering out quite nice, you know, had our little cold snap. We had a few bits of rain and a few games called off earlier in the year, and it was all going swimmingly. And then all of a sudden we get more rain, and it just hasn't stopped. And obviously games have been called off, and yeah, I think it was a conversation that they hadn't banked on having to have, but I think it's rightly why they've done it. There's been some stories around about clubs at step five who have been requesting this extra time. I mean, one of my old local clubs, Sandhurst Town, I read, have got 11 games in 10 days. If it wasn't for this, having to play two games in one day. And then playing every other day, that's ridiculous. Especially this is a club who are, I think they're only sort of like 8 points off promotion with sort of like six games in hand. So there's possibilities there to get promoted. I think similarly, Horndean have got a fixture backlog in the Wessex League, and their manager Michael Birmingham was very vocal in his local paper this week and asking for an extension. And I just think it's sensible all around. I think it's no one's fault. Nothing people could have done about it. It's just it's the great old British weather, isn't it? And it's bringing us once again. But it's a sensible way of doing things. Yeah, and I do get the points deductions as well. It'd be quite easy for two mid-table teams to say, don't worry about it, But that obviously has a knock-on effect for other people as well, and then it brings sort of fairness into it as well. And I just think the FA have come out at around about the right time and made the right decision. And hopefully we can these teams can get the fixtures done celebrate their promotion and enjoy their summer, because it's been a long season.
Yeah, it has been a long season. Interesting kind of phrase as well, that you said that it was all going swimmingly. I think something like the third wettest March in nearly two centuries, I think, played a big part in... And even this week, the sun's shining where I am now on Thursday afternoon, but we've had some rain. And some more rain this week. It's just bizarre. you know, when you're expecting to maybe watch the last couple of games of the season in your shirt sleeves, you're having a wrap up warm and stick your full wet weather gear on. But you know, hopefully, you know, this little bit of a leeway from the FA will mean that everybody can play their games, everybody can see those games, and that we can get through to the end of the season and then get all those playoffs played as well, and then find out where everybody's going to be playing next season. I mean, where everybody's going to be playing next season may change anyway, because that managerial merry-go-round, it's apparently in slowdown this week, because I think, what are we at? We had Roger Johnson leaving Brackney Town over the weekend. I think Stuart Keir announcing that he's set to leave Camel Laird after their final game of the season this weekend. But otherwise, I'd expect probably a few more announcements in the next couple of weeks as seasons come to a halt. I mean, one thing that I did spot this week, an interesting one at Herne Bay this week, the official Twitter channel saying that Chairman Stuart Fitchie had been asked to stand down after numerous promises were made without consultation with fellow directors that the club could not honour. It's never great to air your dirty laundry in public, but at a time where manager Kevin Watson is also doing all he can to avoid relegation, sounds like a club in turmoil, that one.
Yeah, that was a strange one, wasn't it? I just thought the timing of that was a bit off. I don't feel they necessarily had to come out with that statement at this moment in time. You could have not waited a couple of weeks for Kevin to do his business. I actually think Herne Bay have been very honourable this year. They've come into a new level for the first time. They picked up some great results. Yes, it was always going to be a struggle for them. They're playing against some big budgety clubs, and it was always going to be tough for them. And I think they kept their head above water. And then this, obviously, you know, you never goes on. You never know what goes on behind closed doors. I just thought that's a little bit unnecessary.
And I'm sure it goes on at almost every club as well. I mean, that's you know, his personality. Doesn't always say, you know, committee. You know, football clubs are run by committees. Yeah, there's some powerful people that think that they run the club on their own, but it is normally a committee. But a committee should never all agree on everything anyway, because otherwise you'd never make any progress. But it just seems an odd, as you say, an odd time when there's other things to be focused on, to be you know, letting everybody else know what's going on. Because it almost gives your opposition a bit of a psychological sort of advantage, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, you're going into step three. They've got two Saturdays to play, a handful of games, and you know, it's the Herne Bay players I feel sorry for, Kevin as well. You know, they're trying everything they can. They're not gone yet. They still have some hope, and then all of a sudden they have this to contend with, and it's a little bit demoralising. But you know, I just hope that the club can sort themselves out at a good time, whether it be in this division or the division below. Time will tell, but the timing of this does leave a little bit of a sour taste. As I say, it's the manager and the players and the fans as well. I mean, the fans have been stupid. They knew it would have been a tough season, and as I say, they have picked up some good results. They've given them something to cheer for at times this season, but this is the last thing they needed, surely.
Yeah, and talking of turmoil as well, we can't say too much, as no doubt there's ongoing investigations underway, but it was sad to see the Welsh Premier League game at Flint Carnarvon the last weekend abandoned due to crowd violence, something that doesn't seem to be going away from non-league. And I think we both said it before, but how level of the game, I think it needs some help if we're going to eradicate this problem.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, yes, we've had it before. There was a lot of talk, wasn't there, after last year's playoffs, you know, that there was a few disturbances up and down the country, and that's something that still does blight non-league today. Unfortunately, it's happened over in Wales again over the last couple of weeks, and that's really, really sad. I don't quite know how best to eradicate it. I think football is trying to do its bit. I just hope that we don't get a similar situation this year when it comes to sort of playoff season and big games coming up. I just hope that I just hope that football can, that the fans can maybe behave themselves and give it the, you know, the, let the occasion do the talking for them, because it's very, very sad. But sadly, it's not going away. And I think while you've got alcohol being consumed on the premises and access to visiting supporters being so easy, unfortunately, it's going to happen. But, you know, hopefully over the next couple of weeks or so, hopefully, we, you know, when the playoffs games come in, we can have a an incident-free playoff campaign. That would be lovely, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and at the back of it as well, we want to celebrate the wonders of non-league, the best things of non-league. So we should, of course, remind people about the National Game Awards coming up and how you know, people can get involved in voting in various categories.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're coming up fast on the Tuesday, 23rd of May. At AFC Wimbledon's Plough Lane, we've got our usual awards to dish out, and once again they're going to be very keenly contested but as you say, the readers and supporters can all have their say. There's various categories that are entirely down on their votes, down to their votes. Community club is one, fan of the year. There's two or three that you can recommend for or nominate your club man or your volunteer of the year. You know, someone who goes out of their way for your football club and does tremendous things. There's so many people out there who do such great things in non-league football, and it's humbling really to be able to honour these people. Unfortunately, we've only got one award, but who you think is deserving of an award or big recognition and a good day out as well down at AFC Wimbledon, and put them down on a bit of paper or an email or something, send them over to us, and you know, we'll make sure. Make sure that they get read, and one of the most votes win. And yeah, good luck to all.
Yeah, the National Game Awards, of course, and celebrating the best in non-league. The best in non-league happens every Sunday anyway in the non-league paper. Anything else we can expect to read in this weekend's issue, then, John?
Yeah, we've got plenty on the champions of the last few days. South Shields, obviously, they won the NPL Premier. You've got a nice big piece on them. Ebbsfleet as well. Ebbsfleet, they managed to come out on top in the end for an excellent season in National League South. We got a bit on them. Stamford as well. I spoke to Stamford this week, so they're a nice bit to go on in them. And at the other end of the scale, we've got a piece going on in on Tooting and Mitcham, who are a very famous club. Unfortunately, find themselves dropping into Step 5 for the first time. I mean, that's a bit of a fall from grace from sort of one of the most famous non-league clubs of them all. And yeah, we've sort of spoken to a couple of fans and there. So yeah, that's a few bits we've got in this week. I can't say there's a couple of bits got in the pipeline. I can't really say, but it's certainly worth reading anyway.
Tempting us. We're going to buy the non-league paper anyway, John. non-league paper out on Sunday, Monday. For your delectation. John Couch, thanks for joining us once again on the Non-League Football Show, and we'll speak to you again very soon.
Thank you.
And that's it for this week. Before I go, though, I must make mention and give congratulations to Clapton CFC. It's a story we've covered many times over the years on this show, from when we first started some 17 years ago. The story of the oldest senior football ground in London, the Old Spotted Dog Ground, not only sounds like it deserves a place in literary history, but it's also, over the years, become one of those favourite quiz questions and quiz answers for all those with a penchant for non-league. It's built on grounds formerly part of Henry VIII's Hunting Lodge. The pub named after the lodge closed in 2004 and the Grade 2 listed building fell into disrepair, as did much of the adjoining ground. At the start of 2019-2020 season, Clapton FC, then tenants, lost the lease for the ground due to non-payment of rent, and so ended a 140-year playing history at the site. Within weeks, a fan-owned club that was set up by disillusioned former fans of Clapton a year or so earlier got the lease for the ground as Clapton Community Football Club. In July 2020, they purchased the freehold to the old spotted dog. And this week it was announced that after much hard work in updating and repairing various parts of the ground, Clapton CFC will be allowed to play their final games in this season's Middlesex County League Premier Division at the old spotted dog ground. Top of step seven, the Middlesex County Premier, after raising over £15,000 via crowdfunding and investing much time, effort and money into resurrecting the old spotted dog, they also now await a decision on their ground grading and possible promotion. A big congratulations to all involved, and if you fancy being part of their return on Saturday the 22nd of April, keep an eye out on social media in the coming days. Thank you to all of my guests this week, as ever, and for all of you for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join us throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And you can find us every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Steezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic via smart speakers, and all good podcasts aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football. Thank you and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.